emotional structure of the earth. This has to be. And this pain affects the entire fabric from which each individual must gather the elements of his own emotions. As we must keep the physical body nourished by the foods that grow in the ground or on trees, so the emotional life of the individual must be nourished from the emotional resources of the planet. And these emotional resources are being adulterated and perverted until hate and fear are about the only thing we have in abundance. We have to change all this. We have to nourish the emotional life of the planet. We have to be kind. We have to use things in a way that will help us to restore the original garden to which we were given in the first place, which we were supposed to take care of it. We were supposed to be gardeners in the garden of the Lord. Instead of that, we are filching the plants, allowing the weeds to take over, and spending our time somewhere else, wasting time. All these things have got to change. The mind has to change. And a good mind and good emotions in a physical body that is well organized may or may not extend physical life, depending on circumstances that cannot be fully estimated, but will make the eternal life of that person, here, elsewhere, or in other embodiments, that much further ahead. And the more we grow now, the more growth we will have with which to face the future. And if we can grow a little now, there will come into our world in due time persons with greater vision, greater intelligence, greater integrities to help us to face these problems with which we must all someday be faced. So we have one world under one rule, and there is no way of escaping this. There's no possible way of the individual succeeding in wrongdoing. For the moment, he may get away with his lie, but in the end, the lie will do away with him. For the moment, he may make great profits, but a few little bacteria somewhere in the system can end the profit system for him. We may hope that we can conquer nations, but none of us can ever own anything except the very body that we have, and that is perishable. Everywhere we are building on a false foundation. We are believing that great cities have strength in them. We are proud of population increase. We are afraid of the birth rate, but more afraid of the death rate. Everything is in excess. We wonder how we're going to take care of the millions of people here. We can take care of three times what we have if we are not completely selfish, thinking only of extreme profit for ourselves and letting the rest do the best they can. Nature will control this problem. Some years ago, there was a series of experiments made on one of the mesas in America's Southwest. In this particular mesa, there was a flat plateau on the top, and the precipitous sides were such that no living creature other than a bird could possibly get to the top of that mesa. Everything that had to climb or crawl had to stay below. Also, there was very little chance in that desert region for any form of plant life to make the ascent, because it was pretty much above anywhere it could go, and also the barren surface was not hospitable to keep plants alive. A team went up there and examined the situation and found a miniature society there of living things. They found that that mesa, a little isolated area of a few acres on the top of precipitous cliffs, had its own flora and fauna. That for centuries, certain creatures had continued to thrive there by cooperation. Everything there was saved from contamination by outside selfishness. There was no hunter to shoot the animals. There was no man to fish the stream. There was no smog to destroy living creatures or blight the foliage. And there, for thousands of years, a miniature economy had been a success, and will be a success until the individual here, human being, figures a way to subdivide it for condominiums. then it will be gone. But nature will give us what we need if we use it wisely. It will give us the means to survive almost any challenge that can possibly come to us. But it will not aid and abet foolishness or stupidity. Now we're working towards world peace, and we hope we're going to find it. But if we don't find it, or even if we do find it, let us remember that war has never yet been able to accomplish one good thing, because it is contrary to nature. Now, wars have accomplished reforms, but if there had been no war and nature had been obeyed, the reforms would have been unnecessary, because the vices would not have existed. So there are two ways of getting rid of a vice. One is to shoot it, the other is to change it into something constructive and useful to all concerned. I think we should also recognize that as we go far now into another century, with increase of everything in the form of responsibility, that we should personally make a careful study of our own adequate applications of principles. What do we need? What do we want most? What are we willing to sacrifice for what we do need? What is there that we can do to advance our own destiny, at the same time not detract from the destiny of anything else? What can we do to grow without living as parasites off of something else? We have rules on all these things. There are natural laws. The great scriptures and philosophies of the world have given us good working rules, but we have to obey them. And against these are indifference, selfishness, and ambition. We are not much interested in keeping the rules. We want a house in the summertime and another one in the winter. We want new cars periodically. We are willing to pay fabulous sums for athletic events. We do all the things that we can do, that we want to do, and which gratify appetites that, strangely enough, can never be gratified. The Egyptians represented the appetites as a many-headed monster that could never be fully fed. And the same is true of extravagances and of personal ambitions and the desire and willingness to compromise truth for the sake of profit. Each person has to work this out for himself. Well, you may say, if you work this out for yourself, what good does it do to the common group? Well, it will do something, but we have to remember that in this pattern of things, according to our philosophical convictions, we do not depart from here forever and go either to heaven or hell. Most people are just a little too good for hell, but not good enough for heaven. Therefore, we're not going there. We're going right back to the next day in school. And if we were at the head of the class when we left here, we will find ourselves at the head of a class when we get there. When we come back, everything that we have gained in personal character helps us to make a contribution to the future, increase our own integrities, and live a better life and become part of a better culture. We have to earn citizenship in a better world. And in order to do that, we've got to help to build a better world while we're here now. Otherwise, we will not accomplish the dreams and hopes and aspirations which are more or less lurking in nearly every human relationship. I think we're becoming more aware also of the very simple rules regarding personal habits. We are beginning to see what happens when people make certain basic common mistakes. And one of the common mistakes today is failure to give proper consideration to the raising of the young. We are neglecting children dramatically, forcing the responsibility for them upon the state or upon the school, upon something of that kind, while we just neglect them in order to have fun. Now, this is something that is mounting the crime wave to be greatly beyond our expectations. There isn't a day go by in which we don't get notices in the paper, television, radio of juvenile delinquency. We shouldn't expect anything else. Why don't we take these notices as proof of something? A few do. There are conscientious parents who do their very best. But most of those who listen to these announcements keep right on doing what they please, or finding some kind of a 12-year-old babysitter. There is not enough acceptance of the responsibility for mature conduct. We find the crime wave, we read what causes it, and we keep right on causing it, because it doesn't touch us unless somebody steals our car. Then it becomes far less of a tragedy, and we want more officers on the police department. But the things are not; these are only symptoms. The real failure lies in the individual and the school system and society in general, failing in common sense. Not failing in higher education, which may be merely higher institutionalism, but failing in the honest, simple values of life, summed up perhaps in the famous statement that comes in every nation in the world, practically, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. And we look around and we see a harvest of weeds, but we don't notice the fact that we sowed them, or we blame it on something else. We blame it on our political systems or something, but we are those systems. And today we are faced with the result of our own gradual increasing selfishness. We no longer want to establish a permanent home. It's too much of a burden and a responsibility. Everybody wants to be completely free. But if we're not careful, we may be free in space without a planet under us. We cannot continue this type of thinking. And wisdom has been with us for many, many ages to try to help us in these realizations. There are many great schools of philosophy and ethics that can help us in these things. There's the Golden Rule, which is a very good one. And there are many other laws and rules. The scriptures of every religion abound in moral truths that could be used. And of the earth's population, about two-thirds are nominally affiliated with a religious organization. Religion as a system or a part of knowledge is accepted, but not necessarily lived. We are not doing what we should do to make sure that we have found certain rules of common sense in our religious teachings. And common sense is simply honesty. And honesty is concern, consideration, a recognition of common responsibility to common good. This we are gradually losing. Now we come to another election year, and we are going to go through another problem, which we do not fully understand and which may cause us further anxiety. But this is the opportunity for the individual to do the very best thinking that he can, although it may not be too good. If it is one step ahead of the past, he's making progress. So we have to try to take every emergency that comes along as a means of testing internal strength and the way in which we can meet this emergency. Can we only sit and wring our hands? Can we learn something? Can we do something? All of us can learn something if we want to. And what we learn may help us to do something that is better as time goes on. But in all cases, and in the future from now on, we are living in a shrinking planet. We are living in a planet tired of the abuses that we have reaped upon it. We are gradually exhausting many, many resources. The fun generation is not permanent. It cannot be. Therefore, before we have to economize, why not use better the productions that we have? Why not look around and try to avoid the mistakes that are bringing misery to millions of other people? So we go back to Pandora and her box, and we see in Pandora today a kind of outraged nature. We see a nature that is being torn apart. We see a planet that is being devastated. And we know that this planet was called by the ancients the Great Mother. It is from this planet that we must all gain the substance of survival. The ancients had understood not only the surface of this planet, but its undersurfaces, that which was within it. It knew about the magnetic and electric cores within the planet. It knew also that everything in that planet, in this planet, is alive, whether it is animated as we know it. Minerals, metals, and substances are all living parts of a great planetary biology. Everything that is in the planet is necessary to the planet. But as parents are willing to sacrifice something of themselves for their children, so the planet will sustain and support a great variety of labors and opportunities, but not waste. We must stop wasting the resources of our earth. We must use our magnetic fields and those things which are available to us for the greatest good of the greatest number. Unless we do this, we are going to find ourselves in a serious problem. We know also that contamination goes down into the ground. We know that there is an inner vital core, that the planet is alive. This planet is just as much alive as we are, maybe more so. It has various systems. It has its arterial system, its nervous system, its bony structure. Just as any living thing has, this planet has an entire living integration within itself. It is served and noted by three stripes or streaks of life energy. From below upward comes the energy that maintains growth. All plants and things of this nature are nourished from an energy radiating from the core. And then this energy rises through the major stems and roots of these plants. The animal or emotional body is sustained by horizontal bands circling the earth. Therefore, these bands nourish animals and birds largely through the horizontal spine or through some horizontal part of the structure which accepts the energy from the earth itself. For these creatures and plants are all nourished by one earth, by one substance, by one life. Then when it comes to the human being, it's a little different. The human being is nourished primarily from the higher ozonic areas of the earth's surface, the great magnetic fields that extend outward, providing us with oxygen, providing us with life-giving energies, and protecting us from too great power of the sun. Now, we learn from scientific statements recently made that the atmosphere of the outer earth, that part which protects us against the rays of other planets or against the solar energy, this is thinning. Little by little, we are losing the protection which nature provides. And we are losing it because we have wasted it, because we have contaminated it, because we have paid no attention to what we've shot out there into space. We could experiment forever with an atomic bomb and keep on putting on nuclear weapons, and there'd be a big flash, and we think that's the end of it. This is where we're terribly wrong. We are gradually killing the air that we have to live with. We are gradually losing the protections which nature set up and which are there until man destroys them. So all this has to be taken into further consideration. The energy primarily necessary for the energy of man comes from the circumference of the magnetic field and comes from the circumference downward to the center. Therefore, man has been called by the Greeks an inverted plant because his root is in heaven and his body upon the earth. But the root of the vegetable is in the ground, the root of man is in space. But they are all rooted in life, and they're all rooted in law, and they're all rooted in common sense. And they all have responsibilities to keep the rules by which they were created. The human being is the most fortunate, most fortunately placed of all creatures that we know. He was appointed as a gardener in this particular planetary environment. It is therefore not only up to him to protect his own environment, but the environment of all other things. He has responsibilities to protect vegetation, the entire animal kingdom, and the various locked-in spiritual entities which we call minerals. All these things are part of our responsibility. We use them as we please, we destroy them when we want to, and care nothing for what happens. This means a new way of life has got to be created in which we are recognizing the fact that we are stewards. We are not here to run the world, rule it, or own it. We are here to serve it in the name of that power which alone has the right to proclaim its ultimate ownership, and that is heaven itself. If we can continue to do the right thing, we will find that our energies will be protected. Today we are very despondent. We're negative, we're half sick, we're tired, we're worried, and we're concerned. Furthermore, the air we breathe is not what it ought to be. The water that we drink is not what it ought to be. The food that we eat is contaminated. All around, we, in the name of profit, we are killing ourselves. And this will keep on until we realize that actually, while we cannot die, we can do a certain amount of repentance. We can also suffer from our own mistakes, even though these mistakes cannot destroy us as living things, because the life is not in the material world, but in something beyond, which physical things cannot reach, but which physical things can hurt and damage and injure and cause sorrow and sadness. As we look around in the world as it is today, we see a great influx of new hope, for hope is in the bottom of the barrel and always has been. We see hope for all the future. A new light is beginning to shine. A new hope is beginning to develop within us. The individual who has suffered much is beginning to realize that something can be done about it. The corruptions of nations no longer pass unnoticed. The various debilities which afflict us now challenge us. Groups are forming all over the world to help to correct the common causes of trouble. We are working desperately to find an answer to all militant warfare. We are trying desperately to find cures for poverty, for sickness, for ignorance, for narcotics, and for all the other ills that flesh is heir to. We caused them. Now we have to find the cure. But the cures are coming, and hope springs eternal. And our hope is well-founded, for there scarcely a day goes by that we do not hear of some new effort to do it better. We are, every one of us, working as best we can to try and see that some of these things work out in our time and lay the foundations for others that have to work out in greater time. We know that we can do things. And in the next 10 years, I think we will see the greatest upsurge of integrity that the world has known for thousands of years. We are beginning to have one new emotion that is helpful, if in itself dangerous: fear. We are beginning to fear for the future. We are beginning to fear that this future will come while we are still alive. That is not a future that we must now put off for our children's children. It is a future that can hurt us right now, next year, and the year after, and in the memory of the past and in the hope of the future. We are now beginning to recognize that cooperation is the life of survival, and competition the eternal cause of death and destruction. As this gradually grows in us, we will find the work of peace will spread, that religion will have new impetus and new values with which to work and to develop, that religion itself will take on the realization that to keep the laws of nature is to obey the commandments of God. The Ten Commandments have to do with morality. The Ten Principles of Conservation, Natural Resources, and the Protection of the Earth itself from the Vices of Tyranny. These things are coming now more and more into focus. The wars of religions are going to come to an end, because we can only defend these wars by making new mistakes. We cannot destroy another faith without killing part of the world we belong to. And to destroy anyone's belief is a deep wound in the surface of the planet. All these things have to be handled in a different and better way. And we have to help in every way that we can to restore the garden as it was meant to be, where there is enough for all, and minds freed from the competition and tyranny of ambition can settle down to the study of realities, the advancement of inner life, the strengthening and purifying of the purposes of existence. We can each release more of the inside instead of trying to crowd everything on the outside. In this new way of life, the secret poet can come out and be known. The painter, the musician with real music in his soul, can be heard again. Great books can be written again. Great adventures can be undertaken. Great studies of the inner values of life, the study of the extrasensory perception band, the development of the knowledge of man's internal power to cooperate with the divine plan, and the way of finding within himself conscious verification of the dreams and hopes that have become so necessary to our survival. We can find in this pressure of things not an avenging God, but a kindly parent who must be a little more strict and must bring about the things that we all need, whether we want them or not. And if we fail to do that, or the parent fails, we would ultimately, as the untrained children, accuse the parent of failure. We will never be able to accuse nature of failure, however, because nature will never fail to teach the lesson until the lesson is learned. And then it becomes part of the great resource of understanding and insight, which helps to bring us all closer to the divine power which we all desire inwardly and spiritually to serve. This can be the beginning of our first conscious dedication to those rules and laws which will lead to life rather than to death. Thank you very much.